So this evening we have a cold opening to the program because my issues with the playback on this tired and ancient mix desk continue to spiral. So I can't even play you the reverb-laden version of the intro this evening. I suspect it's not exactly why you tune into the program anyway. So we'll take the whole the drum loop and the Tokyo whatever with the David Bowie and Mick Jagger. We'll take that all as read, okay? And we'll just get going on the program this way. It's 6 p.m. Here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. It is the 16th day of August 2018. This is The Horn. You know, even without the intro, this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, screwball, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live. Yes, and if you go to HeadOn.live and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, well, by golly, Anatole and Little Thunder and VT Blom will all be sitting there waiting for you as more wander in through the course of the evening. But they get in early. You know, they get gold stars for being early to the chat room. And, of course, you will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space and be man cave this evening as well. I guess Sparky had got all the man cave out of his system last night, because Sparky takes moderating duties, takes the evening off on Wednesdays usually, and last night was prayer meeting Wednesday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and thus we begin a thorn in the side Thursday with, plenty of thorns. Oh, goodness me, lots and lots of thorns. We take care of issues related to funding of the program at the beginning of the program. We have thanks to send out this evening for our subscribers. We have 3 subscribers on this 16th day of the month. Thanks going out to our buddy of long standing, Glenn, in New York, a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you also to Tim in Arizona. And thank you very kindly to our buddy Reinhard out on the Virginia coast. Thank you to Tim and to Glenn and to Reinhard for being partial sponsors of the program. We also knocked down we knocked down the last $14 last night of the of Darlene's challenge, so that was extremely helpful. And then it got a little bit better, so I get to do a little bit of math on the fly here. Thanks very kindly to Joy up in Michigan with a message. The rich won't rest until the poors are eating dirt, and even then, it had better not be the good dirt, goddammit. From Joy in Ann Arbor. Yeah, no good dirt. Yeah, we only get the toxic waste dirt down here. And that doesn't count, you know, eating dirt and running rabbits. No, that's just, when you eat dirt and run rabbits, that's El Fresco dirt. Bill in Florida, thank you, Bill. A little help for the show where thinking really happens. You know, that's a high compliment, and I really appreciate it. And Bill doesn't direct that just to me. That's to the entire community. So, hey, let's do some quick math. 2, 5, 7. Okay, and 15. 5 minus 3, 2. Okay, so here's where the fundraising goal stands for the evening: $427. And that's awesome. $427. And I remind you, Larry in Liberalville's challenge will roll around. It rolls around again this evening. Larry is providing a challenge each and every evening for the next several evenings of the program. And so there's a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Larry in Liberalville. And if met, that will mean that we will knock out $100 of that $427 deficit we have, and making ending the week a lot less of a painful experience than what it could be. So $427 on the table. Thanks to everyone previously mentioned, 427 on the table and a $50 challenge on the table. So hopefully we can maybe knock it down to 327 when we get that $50 challenge met, and then we'll take it. We'll get to work on the rest of it. Thanks, Scott. Scott says a little more volume if you can work it out. I'm kind of at the limit of what I can do simply because if I do more, then we'll start having distortion, and then I'll start getting the angry emails, and we don't like those. We don't like those at all. But I'll try to project, as I was taught oh so many years ago. Yes, yes, Bob, we've got all the words. Now we have to do is get them in the right order. Yeah. I'll try. I'll do my very best. But thanks for letting me know. So let's start with an email. Because for some reason or another, the story a couple of nights ago about the idiot over at Fox Business News. What's her name? Trish Regan. How do you get a job there? I mean, I used to work in a real journalism outfit. I mean, is it conceivable that I could, get on a plane in Charleston, fly to Atlanta, because you can't just fly to New York, fly to Atlanta, then fly to New York, maybe drink several of those little airline bottles of the cheapest tequila that they've got, and maybe stop once I get into Manhattan. Stop and pick up a 1.75 of tequila, stick my handy swirly straw in it, guzzle that little son of a gun down, and stumble through the doors at Fox and say, listen, I can say stupid shit as well as anybody else you got here. I got a job, and I want you to pay me a lot of money, okay? And they just go, well, will it be stupid conservative shit? No, absolutely. And, I mean, is that how you get it? We could fund the horn. I'm telling you. It
would be our little secret. Yes.
I say all this because I got a note from our buddy, Gary, in the greater New York area. Why Danes happily pay higher rates of taxes. The Danes have a progressive tax rate. Has someone added up the costs to working Americans for all things the Danes get with their taxes that we have to pay for out of our pockets? I wonder if it comes closer to an equivalent to an 80 to 90% tax rate for most of us. Because as those two officials from the Danish government pointed out, the people get a lot. From U.S. News and World Report, why Danes happily pay high rates of taxes. Among other things, Danes can take 52 weeks of paid parental leave. And for anybody who has a family, and that would be a whole lot of us, I doubt if it's limited strictly to maternity or paternity or a newborn. It can be sickness in the family, that kind of thing. 52 weeks of paid parental leave. That's a year. The article is by Mike Wiking, W-I-K-I-N-G. Maybe it's Wiking. Maybe it's Viking. I don't know. But he writes, as chief executive officer of the Happiness Research Institute, I talk to a handful of journalists every week from around the world. As Denmark consistently ranks among the happiest countries in the world, many of the journalists will look at me with disbelief and ask, Danes pay some of the highest taxes in the world, so why are they so happy? Well, the reason is because the monies collected are transformed into what we used to recognize in this country and was spoken of, and we've gone into great detail about this, especially in conversations with Dr. Bill, the pursuit of happiness. You know, right there in the Declaration of Independence. The pursuit of happiness. Okay, maybe those are S's. The pursuit of happiness. And you might recall that Dr. Bill has patiently explained that happiness has to do with group happiness in the sense that it was used in the late 18th century. That happiness, in fact, is a matter of how functional, as opposed to dysfunctional, your community is. And so they have largely succeeded, the Danes have, in the pursuit of happiness. I'm sorry, it looks like it. I can't help it. It's kind of cute and adorable, or maybe it's just annoying as hell. I'll get email telling me one way or the other, or both, actually. The average annual income in Denmark's about $43,000, and they pay about 45% in income taxes. And so if you make more than $67,000 a year, you get another 7% added to that 45%. But somewhere around 9 out of 10 Danish people are happy to pay their taxes because they get a lot back for it. And I guess that's the key. Education's free, even at the university level, no tuition. There's, as Flavio alluded to the other night, there's a $900 a month stipend from the state. That takes a huge burden off of parents worrying, who here in America have to worry about how they're going to get their kids through school, or how their kids are going to earn a living. As mentioned, 52 weeks of parental leave, 5 weeks of vacation. Healthcare is provided as a function of being a resident of the state. And among other things, the bottom line, as the author points out, is that Danes worry a lot less than Americans worry about. I think if you probably monetized worry, and somewhere out there there's an economist and a statistician who knows how to do that, you'd probably find out that American citizens are the most worried people on earth. Take the statement, for instance, from a farmer in Nebraska who, interviewed by the Los Angeles Times, said, "Well, I like Donald Trump and everything, and you make Mark great again and all, but dang." And this is an 81-year-old man. This is a guy who's been a farmer all his life. He's a soybean farmer. Joel Samuelson, 81 years old. He said, "He's going to kill us." He's also 81 years old and still a farmer. He's going to kill us, talking about the tariffs that China has imposed on soybeans. And if it continues into the fall, which, by the way, here we are 1 month and 7 days away from the beginning of, or roughly that. Is it September the 21st or September the 23rd? I can never remember. But we're about a month away from the beginning of autumn. And if the soybean tariffs in China continue to drive the price of soybeans through the floor, as they're doing now, well, 81-year-old farmer Joel Samuelson, he's right. He's going to kill him. The question is, will they thank him for doing it? Will they kiss his little orange cheek? Your choice as to which cheek I'm referring to. In gratitude for having been slain by the idiocy and the dumbass economic policies and the bigotry of Julius Geezer. In the same article, farmer Doug Sathoff says, "I like the fact that Donald Trump is a businessman, but how long can I hold out? I don't know." So they're worried in farm country, especially soybean country, but they're worried in corn country. The life of a farmer is a life of near constant worry. If you're not worried about the idiot in the White House who's making your crop unmarketable, then you have to worry about droughts. And if you don't have a drought problem, you might have a flood problem. And if you don't have a drought or a flood problem, hell, you may wind up with a tornado problem. And then there's locusts. Or then, in the modern era, there's getting sued by Monsanto because some of their goddamn pollen found its way into your non-Roundup-ready patch. A farmer's life is a life of worry and woe. But this is more than usual. And I got a, well, let's see. The Labor Department says agricultural export prices as an aggregate dropped by 5.3% last month. That's the biggest drop in agricultural prices since 2011. And I can almost hear the keys clacking away on keyboards all over America right now as people prepare to send me emails saying, well, they voted for Donald Trump. Fuck them. And news like this does come with a big old wagon load of Schadenfreude. And it's hard not to engage in it. Hey, geniuses, yeah, out there, you with the pitchfork, American Gothic guy. We tried to tell you. You could be selling soybeans as happy as a hog in a waller right now. But no, her emails. I don't know. She's been in government a long time, but, you know, I listen to a lot of Rush Limbaugh and that Fox News TV, and they tell us she's horrible. She's terrible. And what about that there server what was down in her basement? Why didn't they ever let him out? I mean, it just ain't fair to keep somebody locked up in your basement all the time. And was they eating in the basement? Was they getting served down in the basement? Is that where Mr. and Mrs. Clinton ate? I don't know. That server was a worrisome story. And, you know, Trump promised he's going to make America great again. We can't get much greater here in Nebraska, but he said he was going to make us even greater than we already was. So, well, there are Danish farmers. But Danish farmers don't worry like that. No. Among other things, there's a safety net. If you lose your job, there's a viable, vigorous, robust safety net. Workers don't just sort of sink into the mire of a drudgery job. They have an opportunity to continue to advance their own knowledge. And it's paid for. So I think Gary, I think your observation is valid. As Steve in New York points out, worry, the scientific word, is stress. It's almost tautological to say that more stress equals more sickness and that less stress equals less sickness. Can we go so far as to say that that happiness breeds more happiness and that misery breeds more misery? This country doesn't know what it means to be happy. We tried a little bit. Mostly white America tried a little bit, say in the post World War II years, and the economic boom, when the highest percentage of Americans were members of labor unions. But then the Republicans came along and told us that never mind the fact that you're able to put your kids through school and you got food on the table. That's just wrong, and Jesus doesn't love you for that. And Jesus suffered, so why can't you? Yeah. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana says, Bob, and judging from the morons that surround me here in the hellhole, many of the poor will continue to vote for the people who want them to eat said dirt, and they will do it with a smile on their faces and a maggot hat on their heads. Oh, yeah! Ron in Raleigh with a note. For one thing, the Danes are not pissing away their money on a $716 billion defense budget or a fucking space force. Or, hey, a $92 million parade to placate the spirochete-infested thin gray settlings that pass for brains of an orange septuagenarian maniac. Right. So we can maintain supremacy in space or any other dumbass shit we can think of to spend money on other than taking care of the citizens. Yeah. James in Illinois says, why the Danish model works there, they don't send their jobs to China. We would be expected to contribute. Tough to do on a low-wage job. Yeah, no kidding. So, there was something about the Denmark story that just grabbed people's attention. In fact, Lee in New York did some homework and even found where the cupcake remark, the cupcake snark, if you will, came from. Trish Regan's off-the-rail rant about socialism in Venezuela and Denmark, if you start at the 2:30 mark, of her rant, everyone in Denmark is working for the government, Trish Regan. At about the 2:30 mark, you hear about the cupcakes, because those lazy Danish people hate working. Yeah, you know what? If you don't hate it, how can it possibly be work? Right? Yeah. Jesus. Speaking of which, another note from Lee in New York. Seasons, autumn equinox 2018 in the Northern Hemisphere will be at 9:54 p.m. on Saturday, September 22nd in Eastern Time. So I guess the 21st or the 23rd, and naturally, I got it wrong. It's the 22nd. So thank you for the correction. We try to be factually accurate here as often as we possibly can. Thank you, Lee. Steve in New York adds, then there's this. Our sense of community and we're in this together has been steadily and rapidly declining since the statement greed is good actually did become a virtue. Thanks, Reagan et al. Oh, yeah, and bootstraps and all of that crap. And that's how you wind up with people saying, look, when a Republican, well, you goddamn millennial kids want everything for free, and that's why they voted for that damn Bernie Sanders. No, free is just a placeholder word. Nobody thinks that it's going to be that free college is free college. Nobody thinks that free health care is free health care. We understand that we would pay for it because we're used to it. We already pay for Social Security. We pay for Medicare. We know what that feels like. But maybe when we use the term free to describe those things, maybe we're using them in the FDR sense. Remember FDR? And his four freedoms? One of them was freedom from fear, and another was freedom from from want. I learned about those as a little boy. Because back in 1965, 1968, 1969, they were still teaching those things. I even had a book that had been passed down to me from some elder cousin or elder sibling. It was called FDR and the Four Freedoms. Because back then, we still believed in that kind of thing. Bill in Allentown with a note, Pursuit of Happiness. Bill says, thanks, from Sylvester the Cat. See, this is why I love getting on the air every evening. No matter how crappy my day has gone, y'all will pick me up, and sometimes I can pick you up. Yeah, I got emails about the Angels last night. Feathers. Yeah. So that's a starting place. But it's by no means an ending place. Because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, let's go back over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda for some bona fide, genuine, no kidding, stupid. You know, we make jokes here. Snark, if you would. Some people think it's funny. We make jokes here about how goddamn dumb right-wingers are and how ignorant they are of history. I've got examples. That's the thing. We don't just make jokes about it. There are examples. Lots and lots of examples. And I got a couple tonight that are just dandies. From time to time, I'll mention, the homeschool kids who graduated with honors from their parents' living room, who understand completely the geopolitical, sociocultural dynamics of what it was that caused Lewis and Clark to bomb Pearl Harbor in 1492. Mm-hmm. Or the biology that they learn in that text of penguins and pirates, or what the hell ever. But every now and then you get an example that just won't quit. And so it is this evening, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and y'all, you know, Bob, you got to quit watching Morning Joe. Well, my alternative is to watch Fox and Fiends. Where, you know, the Brian Kilmeade and Steve Ducey hold forth with whoever the latest attack blonde is in the middle. And in this case, it's Ainsley Earhart. And Ainsley may be a natural blonde. Today, they were fulminating about something that Chris Cuomo said. And Chris Cuomo of New York, and I'm a little agnostic on Chris Cuomo of New York. He's got done some things right and a lot of things wrong. But he's the Democratic governor. Or not Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo. Wait, there's multiple Cuomos here. Andrew Cuomo. Chris is on CNN. That's his brother. Well, Andrew Cuomo is the governor of New York. All those Cuomos. And Andrew Cuomo apparently has decided he never, ever, 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 ever wants to be president of the United States. Because he said something that will hang around his neck like a millstone for the remainder of his days. And it caused the Morning Zoo crew over there at Fox and Fiends to about have babies, well, have kittens with crocheted tails, live on air. What he said was, Andrew Cuomo, we're not going to make America great again. It was never that great. We've not reached greatness. We will reach greatness when every American is fully engaged. I know what he means. I know what he meant. I am, after all, the guy who says every time I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat or even a little green meanie, or a libertarian. I just want to smoke dope, man, and be conservative. I want to be a conservative dope smoker. That's why I'm a libertarian. But every time somebody says our democracy, reverb doesn't work right now, I don't think. Our democracy. No. Like I said, it's going to be a busy weekend. But every time that somebody says our democracy, I'm the one who says, you know, hold on a minute, bub. Our democracy has always been aspirational and not operational. Thus far, through the history of the United States, we have not proven ourselves to be very good at democracy. And I stand by that statement. And history kind of stands with me. But Chris Cuomo, no, damn it, Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo, in saying America was never that great, well, he really did himself in. Republicans eat that shit up for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. How come Andrew Cuomo hates America? And that's what happened this morning on Fox and Fiends. And Ainsley Earhart, won't be long before I forget her name sufficiently to be able to only refer to her as Ainsley Earworm. Ainsley Earhart wanted to hear from the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing morons who actually watched that program. And by way of soliciting their thoughts, she offered her own justifications on why Andrew Cuomo was just so wrong.
This great country. Let's listen to what the governor of New York said again.
We're not going to make America great again. It was never that great.
Listen to them commies cheer.
The ironic thing is, when he ran for governor in 2010, he put out a video announcement, according to the New York Times. And what does he say? Together we can make New York great again. So it was great. Well, although he said it was never that great.
As you know, he's really had a hard life because he grew up the son of the governor of New York, then married a Kennedy, and then became governor himself after working in the Clinton administration. So obviously, the country has really treated him wrong. Senator Cory Booker lamented the country, saying something savagely wrong. Bernie Sanders slammed the country, fundamentally immoral and wrong. Elizabeth Warren says our law enforcement are racist from front to back. And then you have Governor Cuomo. So the Democrats are really on the same page in many ways.
Yeah.
Good luck on that debate.
We want to know what you think. Send us your comments at friends@foxnews.com.
Hold on. Oh, I didn't issue the hockey puck warning. Please, take the next couple of minutes. I'll vamp here for a second or so, a minute or so. Go get the hockey puck. I mean, it was funny in Animal House when Belushi you talked about, you know, did they quit when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? That was funny. This isn't funny. Get the hockey puck way back there. Run the duct tape around your head so that the neighbors won't call the cops on you and you won't get tased from all the screaming. Here it comes.
You know, we defeated communist Japan, radical Islamists. We ask our men and our women to go overseas to fight for our country and sacrifice so much for this great country so that we can be the land of the free.
You caught that, right? Please. Please tell me you caught that. We defeated communist Japan. Really said that. We defeated communist Japan and radical Islam. Well, we haven't defeated radical Islam. But moreover, and I probably don't have to put too fine a point on this, there it never was, never has been anything remotely resembling communist Japan. Not even a little bit. I can only assume, and here's the fun part, when she says we defeated communist Japan, she's looking at notes. She's got papers in her hand, and she's looking down at the papers and says, we defeated communist Japan. Not the Empire of Japan. Not the Empire of the Rising Sun. Not Axis Japan. Not Fascist Japan. Not Shinto-driven, martial, militaristic, modern-day shogunate warlord Japan. Communist Japan. You know. Because I guess that what American service people referred to as that meatball on the airplanes, well, it was red, wasn't it? And now in the next 24 hours or so, Jonah Goldberg, who made a cottage industry out of arguing that Nazis were really socialists because they've got socialist in their name, and that they weren't really fascists because he, Jonah Goldberg, is a fascist. Oh, he or someone of his ilk will probably be writing an article. Maybe it's already been published. Saying that, yes, indeed, Japan, the Empire of the Rising Sun, was a bunch of commies. Marching up and down the streets, singing Japanese anthems to Karl Marx and V.I. Lenin. Sitting down, having a cup of tea with old Joe Stalin there. Probably explains why Russia was so late in declaring war on Japan. Guess. Jesus Christ. So I guess with this clip, Andrew Cuomo is proven correct. We've never been that great. If you can participate in and have a big hand in beating back global fascism, and it was less than a century ago, and less than a century later, people in the United States, in your own country, can't even remember what kind of bad guys you were fighting, can't remember that it was global fascism that we were fighting. Well, maybe we never have been so great. Kind of glad that Dr. Bill's on vacation this week. That's why he hasn't been on air. Dr. Bill's on a boat somewhere. Somewhere up, probably going to or from, well, he's cruising the coastline of the Northeast, you know, up from Massachusetts and the rocky coastline of Maine up through to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick and all of that stuff. New Brunswick, they've got an Atlantic geography, and then coming back and so he won't know about this clip unless you or I tell him about it. And shh, please don't tell Dr. Bill about this. It's no fun hearing a grown man who's spent a life trying to educate people weep openly. Not any at all, no. It's not. Communist Japan. Communist Japan. And the thing is, that's just another damn day over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And Emery and Marveline there in the matching Barca loungers. Hey, Marveline! I always thought it was maybe they were commies. You know, there's a lot more commies than we knew about. Commies everywhere. You a commie, Marveline?
No, but I heard you might be, Emery.
Michael in Madison. My response to Fox and Friends. I wish I could play it. I can't. But it's a short clip. 9 seconds. 5 words. The American dream is dead. I don't know. Maybe I can. Maybe if I hold it up to the microphone or something. Oh, there. Yeah. Oh, how can I not try? Okay, and up goes the volume. There's the speaker.
Sadly, the American dream is dead.
President Obama has a conference call with you.
Thank you, Michael. We're definitely playing a lot of tech by ear here these days. Sadly, the American dream is dead. Lee in New York. Cuomo. Hi, Bob. Mario Cuomo was a New York governor. Mario Cuomo's son, Andrew, is the current governor. Mario Cuomo's son, Chris, is a news interviewer. Chris Cuomo has a son, Mario. You got it? Yeah, you don't need to. I'm so lost. Help me. Marty pointing out, Andrew Cuomo's biggest sin was that he spoke the truth. And when I saw that quote from Andrew Cuomo, I confess, I thought of a poem. By Langston Hughes. Because really, the greatness of America is not a fixed item. Really depends on who you ask. Langston Hughes wrote, "Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me." And it goes on in that vein. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. And I tend to side with Langston Hughes on that. But don't tell Ashley Earworm about that. She might have a sad. A lot of sad. And then there's this Senate candidate down in Mississippi. His name is Chris McDaniel. I call him because I'm a big fan of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Call him Pappy McDaniel. Is you is or is you ain't my constituents, right? Oh, wait. We're following up with Angel-y Earworm. Communism, etc. James in Illinois. What she meant to say is, thank us, we's us. Yeah. Lee in New York says, hidden Japanese communists, were the music group The Animals secretly, openly Japanese communists? I mean, think about it, the House of the Rising Sun. Lord, you can't, having just returned from there, seems like you hear that song on every block because there is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun. No more singing. God, we've got a fundraising deficit to deal with here. What am I thinking? But I get your point, Lee. Going back to the idea of free stuff, Steve in New York says, I've never liked the term free in the education and healthcare sense. I think it allows the Gestapo and its supporters to accuse us of being out of touch. I think we should call it community-based or community-financed, because we are in this together, and what a community that is, well, community-based. We need to say that, yes, we liberals want to help others with their education and health care because we see our and their well-being as not only inextricably linked, but impossibly unlinked. Yeah, it reminds me when somebody took on Joe Manchin about college tuition. He said, well, we can't just let people have college. I mean, they won't value their education. So I guess you've just got a bunch of, layabout Danish majors over in Copenhagen? That would be your equivalent of English majors here. Just sort of laying around and soaking up money and not appreciating the education they got, damn it. No. So, Pappy McDaniel. Well, wait a minute. Telling comment courtesy of Barkway in the chat room. I'm always amused at the arrogance of Americans in comparing themselves to countries and cultures centuries older than we and finding ourselves superior. Reminds me of teenagers who always assume their parents just fell off the turnip truck and don't know anything. Oops. Amused, yes. Yeah, well, it could be amused or it could be amazed. I mean, it works either way. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana with a note. Come on, Bob. We all know as long as Ainsley Airhead was showing some leg while reading that, that's all the maggots cared about while they were rubbing their groin and thinking, ain't she pretty? And she's so smart. She reminds me of my daughter. Or maybe that's the wrong voice. She's so smart. She reminds me of my daughter. She's so hot. If she wasn't my daughter, I'd probably be dating her. Phew. Mm-hmm. I know. The entire Horn Community Congregation just engaged in a collective full-body shudder. Oh, no kidding. Steve in New York says, I can tell you this, I don't appreciate my $150,000 in law school debt. Yeah, but you appreciate that law degree more. I mean, Joe Manchin would be happy to tell you. You appreciate that law degree more because you got $150,000 of debt to go with it. I mean, just think, if you weren't servicing that $150,000 debt, Steve, what would you be doing? I mean, you'd probably just be out at the beach or, you know, drinking craft beer all the time and not out there, you know, sweating the next case, right? Ron and Raleigh, the reason we can't have nice things. A recent letter in the local Fish Wrap, the letter writer complained about the defined benefit pension that state employees receive. His logic is that since we pay the salaries of state employees and most of us don't have similar pensions, then by God, those people working on our behalf shouldn't have a decent pension neither. It's the old crabs in a bucket syndrome, says Ron. Today's Americans don't want anyone except the super rich to have more than they do. And never mind, and you know, when they make these arguments, they of course display their stupidity, because a defined pension plan is predicated upon the deferment of a certain amount of earned income that was earned in the first place. But just try. I dare you. I defy you. Just try to explain that to Cletus. Good luck. Sorry, that was just a joke on Twitter. So, like I said, back to Pappy McDaniel. He's the Republican nominee for the Senate in Mississippi, and that means that he's got a pretty good chance of becoming one of the next senators from Mississippi. It's going to take some doing to stop him. And he's decided, because, well, it's always a win. It's always a winner, a winning issue down Mississippi, as long as you're only thinking about the people who are who engage in voting while white. Pappy McDaniel decided to amaze and impress the people of Mississippi and of America with his historical erudition by talking about the recent unpleasantness. You know, the war of northern aggression. And in particular, Robert E. Lee. Now, Chris McDaniel, who is more than halfway to being a Kleagle or a Cyclops or a Dragon or something like that, he went to social media this morning to talk about the historical legacy of Robert E. Lee, who never, by the way, set foot in Mississippi that I'm aware of. Well, maybe he passed through Mississippi on the way to the Mexican War back when he was still an American. And so he stated, Robert E. Lee was, this is right up there with the communist Japanese, Robert E. Lee was the most decorated soldier in the U.S. Army. Lee opposed both secession and slavery. And yet to the historically illiterate left, a man who opposed both slavery and secession has come to symbolize both slavery and secession. I probably don't have to need to go any further than that, do I? Damn, that is some 200 proof brass bound restaurant quality stupid. And unless something approaching the miraculous takes place, and there are people working on that miracle in Mississippi. I found that out for a fact a couple of weeks ago in New Orleans. He's going to be a senator. He's going to be a member of the United States Senate, this guy. But the fact of the matter is, and this is a historical fact, you can document it, it's not hard to find. Robert E. Lee owned slaves. Robert E. Lee never had much of his own money. The military didn't pay big money back then. So instead of earning it, he married it. And the money he married, it came with a mansion. If you visit Arlington National Cemetery across the river from Washington, D.C., you'll see that mansion sitting on a hill above a whole bunch of graves. Well, that was the mansion that Robert E. Lee owned through his wife. And the property where all of those dead soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and so forth are buried, and a couple of presidents, was worked by slaves. Slaves that Robert E. Lee owned because Mrs. Lee couldn't own them outright. There are historical accounts of the whipping. Do I have to put the word brutal in front of it? Whipping of slaves at the behest of Robert E. Lee. The only controversy that surrounds that account is whether or not Lee stepped in and laid them on himself. Kevin Cruz is a historian at Princeton. He lit into Pappy McDaniel like Ali lit into Sonny Liston. On Twitter, he said, Lee owned slaves and brutalized them. Lee led an armed revolt against the United States to preserve slavery, and during it, Lee's army captured free blacks in the North and enslaved them. But you were saying something about historically illiterate? He said, historians have documented this in great detail, and anyone who's functionally literate can read their many works on Lee's support for slavery. Virginia seceded over slavery, and Lee said, I will do what Virginia did. Lee, in fact, was not personally silent about slavery. In 1858, he wrote to the New York Times. Among other things, he complained to the New York Times that his slaves were not being sold south, being a quote from the letter. Eric Foner, a Civil War historian, said he was not a pro-slavery ideologue, but I think equally important is that unlike some white Southerners, he never spoke out against slavery. Like I said, he came into property through his wife. His wife's father, having died, George Washington Park Custis. In his will, he wanted his slaves freed 5 years after his death. Lee didn't do that. It was December 30th, 1857, when the New York Times said that Mr. Custis's slaves, quote, will be consigned to hopeless slavery unless something can be done, because his heirs had no desire to free them. With his conscience laying heavy on him, it is said that Mr. Custis spoke to his slaves and said he wanted them freed immediately upon his death rather than 5 years later. But again, you can find the account of Lee insisting that at least one of his slaves be whipped, and disagreement as to whether or not. He actually did some of the whipping. Yep, Devin with a note. Murka, 3/5 shy of greatness. But this is, you know, this is your right wing, America. This is your white wing, America. Cherish it. No, grieve it. Because there's a majority of white people in Mississippi who will see that quote and go, well, of course, because Robert E. Lee was a great man. Greatest general we never had. And his Even if he done had slaves, they was the happy kind. They's the kind that singed all day long and sang from sunrise to sunup because they so happy to be Robert E. Lee's slaves. Jesus, these idiots. One wonders if somebody has already booked Pappy McDaniel for their program so that he can, so that they can maybe try to edumacate him. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Technicality. Old Bobby actually didn't own the slaves. His wife did, which is a minor technicality. Well, especially when it comes to who has the authority to say, lay on 30 and don't let me see you slacking them or I'll have 30 laid on you. But he was noble, old Bobby Lee was. He was noble. Never went down to the quarters and raped any of the slaves or anything because he's too noble. Yeah. So we have reached the end of the first hour of the program, and concomitantly the filibobster. And with that, I'll note that we have a $50 challenge courtesy of Larry in Liberalville that's on the table this very minute. And if we need to meet that challenge. And I hate talking about it this way. I mean, it'd be so much of a weight off my shoulders if we could just take care of this stuff and move on to the rest of the program. Fundraising goal stands at $427. We need to raise 427, so it's not 627 tomorrow night, but at the very least, we got to meet that $50 challenge. 10 at 5, 5 at 10. Hey, how about 5 new subscribers at $10 a piece via PayPal? Could we? Be mighty nice. But it is also a Thursday. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. I think we've proven that in the previous hour. And so we also have, it being a Thursday, we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. But on the way out, as Ron and Raleigh pointed out, we said goodbye today to a person who was probably the finest female vocalist of the modern era. Aretha Franklin will be sorely missed. Ron suggests one bumper, and it's a damn good one. Because of the stuff that I have, the issues I have playing audio here, it complicates things a little bit. I have another one queued up, Ron. I hope you won't be offended. But in terms of saying goodbye to Aretha Franklin, somehow this makes a lot of sense, at least it does to me, when you think about people who talk about the communist Japanese and how Robert E. Lee was a great man who abhorred slavery. Sure. I think this fits. By the way, When Pappy McDaniel was talking about how Lee deplored secession, he kind of left out that famous quote from Robert E. Lee that it is a good thing that war is so terrible, lest we should love it too much. Not lest we should love it too much. Is that accurate? Let me check real quick, just because I'm curious. There it is. I was close. Words allegedly uttered by Robert E. Lee to James Longstreet. It is well that war is so terrible, otherwise we would grow too fond of it. Too fond of it. Too. Which implies that a certain fondness for war was okay with Robert E. Lee. There are some horrible, horrible people in America's past. But perhaps worse than the ones who are obviously horrible are the ones for whom too many Americans make excuses as a means of somehow evading those horrible natures. And Robert E. Lee is, in my opinion, at the top of that list. So as we bid farewell to Aretha Franklin, who incidentally shares a date of death with Elvis Presley, Alexander saying she was one of the greatest vocalists ever of all time. There will never be another to take her place. Never, ever. Rest forever in power, Sister Aretha Franklin, the undisputed Queen of Soul. Alexander says, my heart's broken. I can't believe she's gone. And by the way, the young Aretha Franklin, in many ways, found her voice in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. If you watch the documentary Muscle Shoals, you'll find that segment, and it is a whale of a good piece of the film. So let's take a break. With any luck at all, maybe in the next 5 or 10 minutes, we'll knock down Larry in Liberalville's challenge and go from there. That starts with $50. As we struggle to keep independent progressive broadcasting alive and kicking. Like I said, I think you'll see why I chose this song. At least I hope you do. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Green News Report's on the way. Hey, want to get involved in the conversation? 304-574-8178. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. It's all ever so easy. Don't go away. This part's cool, too. I'll be back. Change.
strong. I'm added to your chain, 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 chain.
It's Thursday, August 16, 2018.
From bad to worse tonight as the number of fires across the province approaches 600.
British Columbia declares state of emergency over wildfires.
The full liability could be $5 billion based on past product liability suits.
Monsanto's parent company grapples with massive judgment against Roundup weed killer.
As far as Puerto Rico is concerned, we have had tremendous reviews. We're doing a great job.
11 months later, the largest blackout in U.S. history is finally over, mostly. Plus,
you can hear from my lips, we will not sell or transfer public land.
Surprise! Interior Department readies plans to sell off public lands from Utah National Monument.
All of those surprises and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
All over California, wildfires are spreading like... They're spreading like something.
This is your Green News Report.
Anyway, it's a lot of fun.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Dizzy Duane, it's not just here in the U.S. where wildfires are going crazy. They got some problems up in Canada as well, I guess.
Yes, yes, unfortunately they do. First, it was California that had to deal with these massive megafires. Now it is British Columbia's turn. The Canadian province this week also declared a state of emergency as firefighters from around the world battle nearly 600 out-of-control wildfires that are burning across the province. Canada has also deployed the Canadian Armed Forces to assist in the effort.
Nothing to see here. Everything's fine.
Meanwhile, in Puerto Rico, the largest blackout in U.S. history has finally ended, mostly. Puerto Rico's electric utility says it has restored power to the last home that lost electricity after Hurricane Maria, 11 months after the Category 4 storm destroyed most of the island's fragile, ancient power grid. But the grid is still unstable, and residents report that the electricity is still very unreliable.
And just to be clear, that was September
20
of 2017, almost a year ago, and now the power is finally back, mostly.
And the lack of electricity and access to basic services over those 11 months had deadly consequences. After months of denial, Puerto Rico's government notified Congress that it estimates the final death toll from Maria is not 64, but likely to be more than 1,400.
Well, that was close.
Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, in his first speech to agency staffers back in 2017, said this.
And I can tell you, you can hear from my lips, we will not sell or transfer public land.
But this week, the Trump administration published a draft proposal to sell off public lands, starting with 1,600 acres of the public lands that Trump had previously slashed from Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, despite those repeated promises by Interior Secretary Zinke that no public lands would be transferred or sold.
Huh. Turns out Ryan Zinke is a huge liar. Who'd have guessed it?
The Huffington Post reports that the sale may be for the benefit of Republican Utah State Representative Mike Noel, a major critic of national monument protections. Noel just happens to own acreage adjacent to one parcel on the chopping block that has been stripped from the monument by President Trump.
What a surprise.
The stock price of Bayer, which just bought U.S. agribusiness giant Monsanto, has plunged 15% in the wake of a jury verdict ordering its subsidiary, agribusiness giant Monsanto, to pay nearly $290 million in damages to a school groundskeeper. The jury agreed with groundskeeper Dwayne Lee Johnson that exposure to Monsanto's popular weed killer Roundup caused his terminal cancer. Johnson's lawyers said that jurors were finally able to see internal company documents showing Monsanto knew for years that glyphosate, the main ingredient in Roundup, could cause cancer. The company says it will appeal the jury's verdict, but Johnson's is only the first of some 4,000 lawsuits against Monsanto. Some good news. Development of the offshore wind industry in the United States does lag far behind Europe, but Bloomberg News reports that America's first large offshore wind project off the coast of Massachusetts is offering long-term contracts to provide electricity that will save consumers about $1.4 billion in electricity costs over 20 years. And finally, in Appalachia, some victories against new pipelines. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, issued a stop work order this week on construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline after an appeals court rejected crucial permits due to the pipeline's impact on public lands and endangered species. That same appeals court also recently rejected permits granted to the Mountain Valley Pipeline in Appalachia, ruling that the Trump administration should not have permitted the pipeline to cut through the Jefferson National Forest and under the Appalachian Trail.
Has Ryan Zinke called those courts environmental terrorists yet?
Nope, not yet.
Only a matter of time. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oop, sorry. I was doing a couple of other things at the same time that the Green News Report was ending. But here we are at 18 minutes past the hour, almost to the halfway point of the program this evening. Thorn in the Side Thursday. As Alexander points out, yes, today was the day that Aretha Franklin passed, 41 years ago, 41 years after the passing of Elvis Presley. But hey, 60 years ago today, and those of us of a certain age are going to go, huh, what? Yeah, 60 years ago today, little Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone was born. That's right, the material girl is 60 years old today. Wow. Just, you know, wow. I'm glad that Brad and Desi got to the environmental terrorist story, because if Kevin Swanson pissed off Sparky last night, and Sparky's no fan of the religion industry, nor am I, and I understood his frustration, to say the very least. Well, I guess Shrinky Zinke, Ryan Zinke, the Secretary of the Interior, the man who tried to bury an inquiry into the mounting public health disaster occasioned by mountaintop removal here in Appalachia, he's blamed the California wildfires on environmental terrorist groups. That's a quote, environmental terrorist groups. Wait a minute, Ralphs can't hear Bob, huh? Hold on, what? We're sending. Somebody in the chat room, help Ralphs out a little bit, please. I don't know, Ralphs. hopefully that will be remedied. Because we're streaming like crazy. In fact, yeah, put a little more juice behind the microphone. But he was interviewed by Breitbart News, Shrinky Zinky was, and said it's environmental terrorist groups who keep the government from being able to manage forests. Terrorists? Really? People who oppose clear-cutting are now terrorists? That kind of, wow. No, it's complete and utter bullshit. Never mind the fact, as Brad and Desi pointed out, that there aren't any forestry experts or wilderness management experts who, you know, agree with that. Let me respond here in the chat room real quick. So, there's that, environmental terrorist. Let's go back to HeadOn.live was quiet during the break. The sound is fine now. What? Okay. And the weekend's getting longer by the minute. Let's run over to New Jersey. Because this one kind of has to be pointed out. Because it's another, you know, it's just another day in Trump-merica. Gloucester County, New Jersey. The New Jersey members of the Horn Family Community Congregation might want to help out with this one. Monroe Township in Gloucester County, New Jersey. There's a guy running for school board there. Yeah, I know, it's not Senate of the United States or member of the House of Representatives. It's not even state legislature. But you know what? It still matters. The school board there has a candidate by the name of Rick Jankowski. Rick Jankowski is a union carpenter. You would think that maybe somewhere along the way somebody would have helped him learn better, but I guess not. He's from Williamstown, New Jersey. It is an unincorporated area within Monroe Township. And apparently, at some point in the past, he has channeled his inner Klansman, as we've seen so many do, especially in the years of the Obama administration and now the Trump regime. And it was in 2013 and 2016 when he put up Facebook posts referring to African-American people as, quote, animals, unquote, and, quote, fucking monkeys, unquote. This is a guy who wants to oversee a school system in charge of the education of the most precious resource of Monroe Township and Gloucester County, its children. April 27th, 2015, Rick Jankowski wrote, "So now I watch videos of the protesters throwing trash cans and any other items at any white person they see. Time to start firing bullets into these fucking monkeys and send them to their graves." Then, in 2014, proving that it wasn't just a one-off, "I'm sorry, but I can't stay quiet any longer. You goddamn animals in Missouri make me sick. Another black criminal gets killed after assaulting a white cop, and you piece of shit want justice? You're not Americans. You're animals who disgust me. You wonder why there's racism in this country? Get a fucking job and contribute, you useless wastes of life, instead of constantly committing crimes and protesting when you get what you deserve. Yeah. The article I'm looking at was silent as to the maybe, and this is where I need some help from. This is where I need some help from the New Jersey contingent. When you run for school board, do you run on a nonpartisan ticket? You don't have to say if you're a Democrat or Republican. Is that what it is? Because this article doesn't say whether this guy's a Democrat or a Republican. Now, my guess is, based on the content of his speech, that he's a Republican. But I cannot say that insofar as I do not have data to support the assertion. But there's no guarantee that he's not a Democrat. Because, sadly, we've got some of those as well. Asa asks, is it me or did your bumper playback go silent? No, I guess the bumper playback went silent. I had no idea why. Well, thank you. Thank you. Dustin with a note. Hey, Bob, after 2 years of being homeless in Sacramento, I finally landed me an internship with the VOA as a cook. I've missed listening to you and all my liberal talkers. I'm at work right now, but I wanted you to know that things are getting better, and I find it funny as hell that my Friday happens to be Thorn in the Side Thursday. How ironic. Well, it's great to hear from you, Dustin, and I'm glad things are looking up. I'm glad indeed. Thanks for checking in, and feel free to chime in most any time. So I don't know if Rick Jankowski is a Democrat or a Republican, but I do know that he has no business on a political ticket in any nation that considers itself even remotely civilized. And here's the thing. He's got a shot. He really, really does. He could wind up on the school board there in Monroe Township. And what a not great day in history that would be for the people in what county? Yeah, Gloucester County, New Jersey. Yeah. One or two remarks? No. I mean, there are plenty, but that's not all there is. July 14th, 2013, and he'd hoped to disappear all of this, but no, not so much. Hope the NFL suspends all of their jackass players for their tweets on the Zimmerman verdict. When blacks make up 13% of the population and commit 75% of crime, it's never about racial profiling. It's about the facts. A majority of the black population is calling it a travesty, but I never heard them whining when O.J. killed two innocent people and was acquitted. Call me a racist if you want. I want to. And I will, and we are. But I'm a realist. No. You could have stopped with racist. You're right there. Stop committing crimes and you'll be judged differently. You are the racist and the problem with this country. If you don't like being profiled, start being productive members of society or get the hell out of the country. I work with many black people who are great hard workers and are living the American dream and have yet to hear them bitch about how blacks are categorized. Well, that's probably, Rick, because you're not the kind of guy that they really want to talk much to about it because they know you're a fucking Klansman. Sorry. This bullshit about being oppressed and being owed something has to end. Everyone is afforded the same opportunity at birth. Bullshit. And it's their choice on what path to take. Start making the right choice. Hats off to the residents of Ferguson, Missouri. Once again, you animals showed your stupidity and ignorance by looting and burning businesses in your own town because a shoplifting kid who assaulted a cop was shot. Act like a law-abiding citizen and this crap never happens. It goes on and on and on. Responding to something that Cher wrote, he said, if I was a cop, Cher, I'd be arrested for unload all my ammunition into them. Going back to 2015, funny, I don't remember the president singing at any funerals in Boston after the bombing, or in New Hampshire after the children were slaughtered, or in Colorado after the movie theater shooting, but he couldn't get to Charleston fast enough, and people wonder why there's racism in this country. Look at your president and the example he sets. Big fan of Barack Obama, Rick Jankowski. Just heard the idiot-in-chief say that nonviolent drug offenders should not be incarcerated for too long because it costs money to jail them. I wish a nonviolent offender gets behind the wheel stoned and runs his ass over!
Ooh-wee!
Mm-hmm. Marty asks, Rick Jankowski is a union what? The audio glitches right there. He's a union carpenter, Marty. A union carpenter. A member of the Carpenters and Millwrights Union. Which, by the way, has a long history of being welcoming and open to all ethnicities. Last I checked, their membership magazine is done in English and Spanish. And they need to step up and denounce this prick. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, once again, you're taking this fine gentleman out of context and he isn't a racist. That said, completely tongue-in-cheek. Marty, get the hell out of the country. Yeah, I know, he says. And I usually respond something like, give me a hand with the immigration papers and I'll leave. Nah, Marty, you gotta stay and fight, brother. You gotta stay and fight. Can't let these little bastards win. Oh, by the way, I've got a cowbell to award. Yeah. The cowbell goes to Lee in New York, responding to Steve in New York, talking about his student loan debt a little bit ago. This was good. If Steve didn't have to pay the debt for getting a law degree, you know what he'd be doing? Opening a cupcake shop in Denmark? Mm-hmm. See, it was worth the cowbell. And it was worth looping back for. Absolutely. Regarding Rick Jankowski, Brother Deacon Asa says, I've asked this before, and here I am doing it again. Why do such disproportionate numbers of these Nazis have Slavic last names? You know, I don't know. But I know a lot of people with Slavic last names that are the diametric opposite of this prick, too. One of them being Boss Man Wayne. Alexander responding to Dustin there a minute ago. God bless Dustin for finally getting a job. Take it from me, Brother Kincaid. Being homeless ain't no joke. It's pure hell in more ways than one. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, not even my worst enemy. And that marks out your essential basic human decency. Alexander, it really does. And let's see, 7:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That means we're halfway through the program. So we're past the dinner hour here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Late dinner hour in the Central Time Zone. Mountain Time, we're right smack dab in the middle of it, and you're probably just now getting ready for it in the Pacific Time Zone. But hey, we're going to be talking about breakfast, so you know, you should be okay. Who am I trying to kid? News out on some of the fun stuff in your breakfast cereal. A new study released by the nonprofit Environmental Working Group says that 31 out of 45 tested oat products, granola products, and snack bar products, 31 out of 45 of the tested products have levels of, wait for it, glyphosate. That's right, the chemical, the toxic chemical in the almost ubiquitous poison Roundup herbicide. The levels in those 31 out of 45 tested products are higher than that which is considered to be safe for children among scientists who know what the hell they're talking about. Yeah, really. And you were worried about the sugar in the super frosted chocolate sugar bombs. It's the Roundup. I was in the store the other day. I saw that we now have another brand of breakfast cereal, which stakes out another claim to freedom in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today, forever in the universe under God. It's just not the same without the reverb. We now have Dippin' Dots cereal, which I'm sure tastes nothing like Dippin' Dots. You know what Dippin' Dots are. Dippin' Dots are little tiny molecules of ice cream that they sell in convenience store freezers and whatnot. Maybe they sell them in your... maybe they sell them at Trader Joe's. I don't know. But I'm willing to guess that Dippin' Dots cereal doesn't taste anything like Dippin' Dots sort of... It was originally marketed as like ice cream from space or something like that. But it is little tiny, you know, round pellets of ice cream. Marketing. It's a big dollar. It's a good dollar. If your breakfast cereal groceries are made of oats, then there's a pretty decent chance that they've got an unlisted ingredient in them, to wit, Roundup. Roundup, by the way, was recently the topic of a $289 million cancer verdict. Let's see. 45 samples, 45 conventional samples were tested, 16 organic samples were tested, 43 detections, there were 43 detections in the glyphosate, of glyphosate in the conventional, brands tested, 5 in the organic, and above the Environmental Working Group's health benchmark of 160 parts per billion, well, 31 out of the 45 scored that. 0 in the organics. Maybe you might want to look on your shelf for the following. Back to Nature Classic Granola. Quaker Simply Granola, oats, honey, and raisins and almonds. Back to Nature Banana Walnut Granola Clusters. Nature Valley Granola Protein Oats and Honey. A lot of hustling of the word nature here. Must be a good dollar. Kind Vanilla Blueberry Clusters with Flax Seeds. Giant Instant Oatmeal Original Flavor. Quaker Dinosaur Eggs Brown Sugar Instant Oatmeal. Great Value Original Instant Oatmeal. That's what you'll find on the shelves there at Wally World. Umpqua Oats Maple and Pecan. These are all instant oats now. We're out of granola. We're into instant oats. And Market Pantry Instant Oatmeal Strawberries and Cream. Oat-based breakfast cereals. Kashi Heart-to-Heart Organic Honey Toasted Cereal has no Roundup in it. On the other hand, Cheerios Toasted Whole Grain Oat Cereal has 490 parts per billion of Roundup in it. Oh, they're always after me, Lucky Charms. 400 parts per billion. Barbara's Multigrain Spoonfuls Original Cereal, 340 parts per billion. Shame on you, Barbara. Kellogg's Cracklin' Oat Bran Oat Cereal, 250 parts per billion. Now we move into the snack bars that you might put in your little little fanny pack when you go on your hike or whatever. Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars, Oats and Honey, 340 parts per billion. Quaker Chewy Chocolate Chip Granola Bar, 120 parts per billion. Kellogg's Nutri-Grain Soft Baked Breakfast Bars in Strawberry, only 30 parts per billion, just a little bit of deadly poison. Kind Oats and Honey with Toasted Coconut, no parts per billion. Cascadian Farm Organic Harvest Berry Granola Bar, no parts per billion. Whole Oats, 365 organic old-fashioned rolled oats, you're in the clear. Quaker Steel Cut Oats, 530 parts per billion. Quaker Old-Fashioned Oats, well, they only have 390 parts per billion. Bob's Red Mill Steel Cut Oats, 300 parts per billion. Not so much in Nature's Path Organic Old-Fashioned Organic Oats, only 30 parts per billion. Whole Foods Bulk Bin Conventional Rolled Oats, only 10 parts per billion. Bob's Red Mill Organic Old-Fashioned Rolled Oats, ran from none detected to 20. Let's remember. I know. Alexander says, Jesus, Brother Kincaid, talk about literally eating yourself to death. But remember, there's only one reason that we use Roundup. Because the stuff you use Roundup on has to be genetically modified so that you can use Roundup on it. That's why it's called Roundup Ready. Roundup will kill the weeds around it, but not kill the Roundup Ready crop. That would be your Monsanto. Yeah, it's poison. What's the response to that?
Well, you know, everything's got a little bit of poison in it, and you know, maybe homeopathy really is real, and you just take in a little bit of poison, and it immunizes you against the poison. I mean, look at what gradual doses of Iocane powder did for Wesley there in The Princess Bride. Oh, God. By the way, this is part of the Environmental Working Group Children's Health Initiative. Scott Faber is Vice President of Government Affairs at EWG. He said, we're very concerned that consumers are eating more glyphosate than they know. Dr. Jennifer Lowry said, I was shocked. She heads the Council on Environmental Health for the American Academy of Pediatrics. She's a toxicologist at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City. She continued, we don't know a lot about the effects of glyphosate on children, and essentially we're just throwing it at them. Look on the bright side, Jen. Dr. Jen, soon we'll know a lot more about what Roundup does to children. And maybe we'll even know what happens to the children that the children who had Roundup in their cereal, what happens to them? Maybe they'll be born with babies' arms growing out of their heads. Or maybe they won't be born at all. Meanwhile, no major news releases from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi Stan, or the Family Resource Council, or the Focus on the Family, or Pat Robertson, or Jerry Falwell, Jr. Daddy's busy getting the pineapple in hell treatment. Not a word from them on this, because their Jesus doesn't care if children get poisoned for corporate profits. I don't mean to turn it around to them, but it's another case of, well, yeah, Robert in Australia, that's probably about the size of it. Robert in Australia noting, so, it's safer to eat the cardboard box the cereal comes in. Thereabouts. Brother Deacon Asa says, imagine my absolute horror when I saw that glyphosate article first thing in the morning, realizing that I've unknowingly been poisoning my little two-year-old, giving him snacks of Cheerios, thinking they were benign. Brother Deacon Asa is a past master of snark. Brother Deacon Asa is not being snarky right now. It makes your blood run cold. And sometimes, you know, sometimes that kind of fear, that kind of horror is long-term. Or sometimes it comes at you unbidden. My beloved wife and I have been having a lot of conversations lately. I don't think she'll be too irked at me when I say this. We spend a lot of time talking about the health effects of living in Appalachia, or trying to live in Appalachia. And our eldest daughter recently had her thyroid removed, which is not like, I mean, hell, having your appendix out is major surgery. Having your gallbladder out is major surgery. Having your thyroid out is even majorer surgery. And then our next daughter after that just had nodules diagnosed on her thyroid. And there's a list of other stuff that our family has been through over the course of the years. And we look at each, and we made a conscious decision once upon a time before all this science came out of, you know, we're going to stay in West Virginia because it's fairly quiet here. You don't have the madness of the big city. This was also back when West Virginia's government was largely Democratic and not the maggot-driven nightmare that it is now. Back when a college education in-state in West Virginia was not ridiculously expensive. But imagine our horror as we have watched these things befall our kids. And that's why what Brother Deacon Asa wrote resonated with me. Because you can't, in the United States, you cannot dodge, you cannot outrun the relentless drive for corporate profits that supersedes any parental desire to do right by your kids. European nations have taken steps regarding glyphosate. Meanwhile, it took a court here in the United States to tell the EPA that no, by God, they could not tell corporate poisoners that they could continue to use a poison that was a known toxin for little children. And we're not even talking about glyphosate or Roundup there. We're talking about an entirely different poison. Since we've had Denmark on the brain for a couple of nights, do Danish parents have to have these conversations? Should we leave Denmark? Can we escape the corporate toxins? Now, granted, I know there were the wind patterns after Chernobyl wreaked havoc across Europe. But that wasn't the Danes or the Germans or the French or the Poles' fault. And sadly, you know, Porfirio Diaz said it about Mexico. Poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. But you can say the same thing for poor Canada. And I don't know what Canadian laws are with regard to something like Roundup and Cheerios. You know, back years and years ago, some of us film fans would watch and chuckle grimly at the madness of General Jack D. Ripper. In Dr. Strangelove. Fluoride, Mandrake. Fluoride. In little children's ice cream, Mandrake. In little children's ice cream. Your commie doesn't drink water, does he, Mandrake? Oh, he drinks... What's he drink? He drinks vodka. Well, that's why you'll always... That's why I'll only drink pure grain alcohol and rainwater. And he seemed, because he was, utterly insane. Now it's not so insane to wonder what they're putting in Cheerios, Mandrake. Little children's breakfast cereals. I mean, they're not... No. Let's make no mistake. The Kellogg's and Quaker and whatever, you know, they're not walking up to the drying rack or whatever the ever, and saying, here, let's spray on a little Roundup, make sure no weeds come up while we're drying the rolled oats. No, they don't do that. It goes back to the fact that Monsanto hustles this poison. Remember those farmers we were talking about at the beginning of the program? Isn't it interesting how these things just make little loops within loops inside the program? Hey, he's killing us. Well, hey, maybe if they can't sell their soybeans to China, that means that maybe some little Chinese kids won't be poisoned by fucking Roundup. Oh, well. But there it is. There wasn't a market for Roundup. Monsanto created a market for Roundup by creating a crop that would resist Roundup so that they could kill everything else that lived or tried to live in the soil. Hey, you know, that's going to make your life a lot better. And Marty said, oh, just tell me about the oatmeal. Well, now you know about the oatmeal, Marty. Scott, nature in cereal names. I'm guessing the use of natural or back to nature in the names of tainted breakfast cereals has to do with how long-term consumption of glyphosate will literally get you a long dirt nap. Well, now. Yeah, that's worth a jingle. Try not to jingle too loud, because for some reason, the way the board's behaving, the cowbell's coming out very, very loud. Scott also points out, I stopped consuming breakfast cereal whenever they stopped making Team Flakes. No punchline, just a fine cereal that managed to stay crunchy pretty much to the bottom of the bowl. See, here's the sad thing. I'm not a big breakfast cereal guy myself. I'd just as soon have a cup of yogurt. God only knows what's in that. Unless, of course, you're going to eat that Siggy's Icelandic yogurt that strikes me as being a hell of a lot more like sour cream. It's great. It's great on a baked potato, even with the blueberries in it, but whew, turn your mouth inside out. Agnes loves it. Me, not so much. But of all the breakfast cereals, probably because I've got an emotional attachment to it, whenever we would come up here and visit when I was a kid, both of my grandmothers would always have Life cereal on hand, which is made of, anybody? Oats! They didn't even bother testing Life cereal. Maybe they couldn't stand the irony of it. You know, Life cereal being full of fucking death. But that was my one breakfast cereal. I like the taste of Raisin Bran, but the little damn bran flakes just don't hold up. I mean, you pretty much got to pour the milk on and then just kind of throw the bowl at yourself in hope of getting a few flakes that are still crunchy. The things we talk about here. Michael in Madison with a note, Dippin' Dots cereal. Oh my, yeah. You get a jingle too, Michael. Has Sean Spicer weighed in yet to declare Dippin' Dots cereal not the cereal of the future? Future. Maybe it'll be served aboard all flights of the Space Force. God, the Space Force is just a gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? With regard to the brand Kind, hey, Bob, the commercials for the company that makes Kind snack bars says that they don't put unnatural ingredients in their breakfast bars. Well, it sounds like maybe they don't. They passed the tests. So, you know, the fact that there are products on that list that didn't have any poison in it proves that you can make products that don't have poison in it. Them. Grammar. It's a thing. So that means, in turn, that the corporate profiteers who have Roundup poison in them just don't care enough to keep the poison out. I don't know, maybe the CEO of Quaker Oats or whichever holding company or whichever capital management hedge fund, whatever company owns Quaker Oats. Maybe they also own stock in fucking Monsanto. Maybe that's the answer. Ron in Raleigh says, what's in it, you ask? How about a little bovine growth hormone and udder pus? Well, I know. I try to buy the ones that are labeled no RGBH. RBGH, recombinant bovine growth hormone. I try to buy that stuff. Because, you know, I've read about the udder pus a while back, and that was just like, ew. Yeah, we're now approaching straight up 5 p.m. in the Pacific time zone, and dinner has just gone to hell for the entire Pacific time zone Horn Family Community Congregation. I apologize. But with things like this, I really feel a sense of duty. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I do try to at least put information out there that can be put to use and can maybe be helpful. Brother Deacon Ace is out in the Pacific time zone. And I'm guessing there won't be any more Cheerios brought into Shea Brother Deacon Asa. I've seen photos of his 2-year-old little boy, and I'd be hard-pressed to put a bowl of Cheerios in front of him now, knowing what we know. It had to happen sooner or later. James in Illinois. Why, Bob? Why do you hate America? You know what I haven't gotten yet? And I'm surprised. I don't know. Maybe you guys are falling down on the job a little bit. I haven't gotten a stop telling us how to eat our breakfast cereal. Stop trying to eat it. Stop telling us how to eat our Roundup laden breakfast cereal, Bob. I mean, I really did kind of expect that. Jesus. So here it is, 8 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone. Still trying to match Larry and Liberalville's challenge for the evening. And hopefully that'll happen in the next hour or so. It was a real struggle last night. I apologize. I know it's a struggle. But sometimes that's how it goes around here. Hey, let's run out and check in somewhere in the greater Los Angeles area. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Tracy.
Yes. It is me. Tis I. How the hell you doing?
I'm glad I didn't have any Cheerios this morning. That's all I can say.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, come on. Is it ever going to stop? I mean, I just
not until we stop them.
Until we stop them, And it just goes on and on and on.
Well, you know, the irony, since we're talking about Cheerios, though, Tracy, it occurs to me that, you know, the goddess of irony was working overtime on this one, because what's the marketing the marketing image for Honey Nut Cheerios? It's that cute little fucking bee, right?
Exactly.
Well, that cute little fucking bee would probably be deader than Pharaoh's house cat if he got anywhere near the oats that were growing for Cheerios.
Exactly. You know, when you think about the, you know, profits over people, I was in Vegas over the weekend. Went to see Stevie Wonder was in concert, so I went to see Stevie Wonder at concert.
Oh, cool.
And
unlike George Bush of many years ago, did not wave at Stevie, did you?
Oh, no. Did he really?
Forgot about that, did you? Yeah, it was a command performance there at the Kennedy Center or whatever. Stevie's sitting there banging away on the keyboard, and Dim Leader waved at him. Till Laura kind of looked up. Till Laura looked over and went, George, stop that. He can't
George.
See you.
He can't see you, dumbass. So over the course of the weekend, I had the opportunity and the privilege, because I really haven't spoken to my brother-in-law since the election, because I haven't had a reason to do so. On Sunday, and we got into somewhat of a heated discussion about, you know, not so much politics, but just the way of the world and white people. And my sister was telling me about, you know, some of the comments that he's made that white people make before they realize it's, you know, what they're saying is racist, because, you know, since they're never really, some people, white people aren't around white, black people, they, you know not to, don't know not to say things. And apparently they saw a friend of hers that was really buff, and he leans over to my sister and said, a brother, and says, wow, he has a prison body.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, nice. So my sister at the time tried to point out to him that was a racist thing. And of course, he does what all white people do when you call them on the racist shit that they say. Well, I'm not a racist. Nobody said that you were a racist, but what you said was a racist statement. Well, I know plenty of guys, you know, instead of just owning the fact that he said something racist and not and saying, I'll never say it again, you know, he, of course, got offended. Because we were called, you know, we were hurting his little delicate feelings. And I'm like.
And they are delicate, are they not?
They are so delicate. They are so fucking delicate. And so, you know, he kept going on and on. Well, I'm not a racist and stuff like that. And I'm like, Bob, you look, honey. Nobody's saying that you're a racist. Because then he pulled out, well, I've been with your sister for 10 years. And I'm like, and so the fuck what? I said, before those 10 years, the last 10 years that you've been with my sister, you were on this earth for 55 years before that. So you have a lot to unlearn. You know, and he, you know, and still, you know, it just drives me crazy. And I'm like, and then he pulled out about, here's a good one. He talked about stereotypes. Because, you know, I think once he kind of got away from the other one, he's like, well, you know what? I get stereotyped, too. And me and my mother's friend, who's a union organizer, just looked at each other like, oh, here we go.
Game on.
game on. And he's like, well, you know, I'm tired of people stereotyping me as the stodgy white, older white guy and stuff. And I looked at him, I said, I feel for you, Bob, but let me ask you something. And that stereotype. Has anybody thought, because of your stereotype, automatically that you're a criminal?
No.
Has anybody
I think there are some assumptions made, but criminal isn't necessarily one of them.
Right.
Easily sunburned is one of them.
Right. Has anybody thought, because of that stereotype, that as soon as they saw you walking into the elevator, or they would automatically grab their purse? Has anybody, because of your stereotype, ever feared for their lives when the cops pull them over? Has anybody with your stereotype, with that stereotype, ever worried about being shot in the back by a cop? And so you can imagine how the list went on and on.
Exactly.
You know, so I wanted, I wish I could be the only, you know, the, I wish as a black lesbian, the worst thing that anybody would look at me was the fact that I was a stodgy old white guy. Yeah, that shut him up.
Ooh. Yeah, that would. That would.
I just wish the worst thing that ever happened to me when I walked into a room and never uttered a word of it, because I've had it happen. I mean, I get the looks. I said, has anybody ever followed you? You walk into a store and you get followed around because the assumption is that you're there to steal? Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever been thought of as less than just because of the color of your skin and your gender?
You kind of put on a master class seminar there, Tracy.
Right. I mean, forgive me. You know, when I can't feel bad for you, don't cry for me, Argentina. I can't shed a tear for you. I cannot. And so the conversation changed. He asked me about my son, and I said, well, you know, he was taking a test about a month ago for to get into the apprentice program for electricians, IBEW. Hi, Sparky. And my friend, my mom's friend, Patsy, he said, well, have him call me because I have contacts, you know. And I said, you know, because we were talking, and I'm like, okay, I will have him call you. Because like I said, union organizer, she started off working for the County of Los Angeles, and then she started working for, I forget what the union is for county workers, and really got into the union movement big time. So I brought up the fact that, you know, up until I said that back in the day, they had programs throughout the country for young black men to get into the trades, you know, for apprentice, you know, carpenters, electrician, all that. I said, as a matter of fact, that's how my father became a carpenter, through the Urban League and whatnot and so forth. And Bob, being the white Republican that he is like, well, what happened to those programs? I said, the 80s. Remember that I didn't say Reagan.
How did you not? Because Reagan is the answer, Tracy.
I didn't have to say Reagan. You know what I'm saying? Because the only thing I said was the 80s. And I looked at him like, and you know what the fuck I mean. Because I didn't really want to get into the whole Jesus, Reagan was Jesus kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I can understand that.
Up until the 80s, we had the, because he was saying, well, because he was hoping that, you know, he was going to say that the funding for these programs were local. I said, no, the funds were locally dispersed, but they came from the federal government.
Ta-da.
So there.
Yeah.
Well, my sister is Patsy's goddaughter. And as much, Patsy is a stone cold sister. And you know, don't get me wrong, Bob loves my sister, even though I think he kind of fetishizes her. But, you know.
Yeah, let's be clear about throwing around these Bobs here, okay?
Yeah, Robert. I'll just call him Robert.
Okay.
Call you Bob. So, you know, because he is 30 years her senior. But he does take care of my sister.
Well, that 30 years wants, that 30 years senior might explain a lot too, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Because it's like he's not used. I mean, my sister, for her part, is pretty militant at times. But I when we talk, sometimes I hear Bob in her, because until Bob, she never touched a gun. She owns a gun. She has a carry permit now. She goes hunting with him, and they shoot off, you know, assault rifles and all that stuff. she's still a Democrat, thank God, you know, and she did jump in his ass for voting for Trump and all that. But, you know, but there's some the things that when we have conversations, I hear Bob and not her. And I'm like, okay, okay, you know. But when, you know, oh, and we also got into it about unions, you know, because he tried to say something about unions. And I'm like, Bob, were you in a union? Because he's a retired airline pilot. And he's like, yes. And I said, and you have bargaining power, and you have a pension because of it. All these wonderful things that come as a, because of the benefits of being in a union. And yet you fit, do you, so you're saying that no one else has that right? That no one else has the right for decent working conditions? No one else has the right for a living wage? No one else has the right for a pension and health care and all these things? No one else? You know, black, I get tired of elitist white men who, you know, I got mine and fuck everybody else.
Yeah, Igamfu.
I mean, that's a lot of people,
it's real. You know, Igamfu is real.
It's so real. And it's, you know, when you were talking about earlier about, you know, this country and how, you know, the greatness of this country or you know, like when you talk about Langston Hughes and how this country has yet to live up to the promise that it could be, it resonates with me. I was, you know, I was watching something the other night, well, actually last night, and there was two programs. One was Queen Sugar and one was Love Is, both on the Oprah Winfrey Network and both basically with a strong African-American storyline. And on both programs, they talked about James Baldwin and saying that if you're black in America and and only have to be semi-conscious, I'm paraphrasing, you are in a forever rage. Because if you're not in a rage, there's something wrong with you. And we have the, and when I hear that and I think about, you know, James Baldwin gave black people the right to be pissed the fuck off. But then you have people on Fox News and my brother-in-law and all that who basically say, we don't have that right. How dare we be angry? How dare we want equity? How dare we want more? You know, why, you know, we have to settle, you know, while other people don't. And it's just, It turns my stomach, and you know, and I find myself as a black woman, you know, and sometimes I, you know, and it's so funny because before I heard that quote years ago, not years, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and until I heard that quote, I was wondering why I was all. It wasn't that I was always angry, Bob. It was just that there was a state of pissed offness. If that makes sense. And I couldn't explain and understand why. And then I heard that quote and I'm like, oh, okay. And James Baldwin probably said that what, in the 60s? 50s, over 50 some odd years ago?
Yeah, I think that's safe.
You know, and that was 50 some odd years ago. And nothing has changed. I mean, we had that glimmer of hope in the, you know, 60s and the 70s. That things were changing and things were getting better. And then we got Nixon. And then, okay, we had a little moment of clarity when we got Carter. And then we got Reagan. And then we got Bush the first.
Reagan is the benchmark. Reagan is when things go to shit.
And Reagan is when things go to shit. Reagan is when you get, you know, the welfare queens and entitlement programs and, you know, basically saying that, you know, taking away everything that people have worked so hard for, affirmative action, unions, all these things, and making people feel bad that we want, that we cared and had some kind of a safety net in this country. If you were older, if you were sick, if you were poor, you know, we had these things. You know, until Reagan became the governor of California, the UCs were free for California residents.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, we got these pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality motherfuckers that, wait, how can I pull myself up by my own bootstraps when I can't even afford the boots, Bob?
Right. You just wind up scratching your own legs.
Right. And I get to that point, you know, and then I hear about Monsanto and the court, you know, and the subsidies and all, and how these people know, like Monsanto, the tobacco industry, the alcoholic, you know, alcohol, all these people, all these big corporate people know that their products kill people. Oh, let's not forget about Big Pharma with the opiates. They know that their products are deadly, but they don't care.
That's the bottom line.
They don't.
You know,
they don't care
there's a statement. Roundup glyphosate contains a statement that Roundup contains products known to the state of California to cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the power of the big poison, they can they can overcome that.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Roundup in particular just amazes me because, you know, you can walk into any of your big box home improvement store and buy it by the gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And spray it, you know, and spray it in the yard where your kids play.
Or your dogs or whatever, your animals.
I mean, maybe that's just par for the course in a state like West Virginia, but there are other enlightened states beyond California where you'd think there would be, you know, a great big skull and crossbones over it. You know, don't use this if you plan on using it around any living human being.
Yep. I just, when I hear these things, and then I look at, you know, corporate welfare and all these other things it's always been bad. And then when Citizen United came along, it made it even worse. But now we have an administration that, you know, used to be I'm not that big of a historian or anything like that, and I don't know a lot of things about politics and stuff like that. But at least before Dope 45 became, you know, president, at least there was some, you know, shade. I mean, they at least try to hide the bullshit. They at least try to hide the giveaways and the things that they do and the, you know, the lack regulations and stuff. I mean, it took you a minute to find it, but, you know, it wasn't so obvious. Now, it's just like it's open season. I mean, when you have people like Scott Pruitt, is he gone? Did he get fired? Did he quit?
Well, he more or less resigned. He more or less jumped, although I think there were a few people pushing.
Okay. But he still was there long enough to do damage. But when you have people like Scott Pruitt, you know, like he's running the EPA, or formerly running the EPA or whatever, and who didn't file lawsuits against the EPA on behalf of corporations and stuff like that, when you have people out, you know, to deliberately poison the water, the earth, the air, and it doesn't matter because I'm going to be rich and doesn't matter. But do these people think, what I've often wondered, and these people's drive to become as rich as possible by destroying our earth, do they not think about their children? Do they not think that their children?
No, there's a cognitive disconnect. In this country in particular, Tracy, we so thoroughly associate wealth with power and privilege that I suspect that there's a disconnect by which people with lots of that think, well, it can't happen to me. or well, I mean, or for instance, you know, the CEO of Trans Canada doesn't live near any one of his could explode at any moment pipelines.
Right.
They don't live where the poison happens, so they think therefore they're protected.
Or they don't live near the train tracks where these bomb trains can go, and you know,
or the coal train, or the coal trains for that matter,
or the coal trains, or any of these places where you know things can happen. But then again, as you've pointed out when I first started listening to the to your program about mountaintop removal and the particulates and all that, that shit is in the air.
Yeah, and what and as I
everywhere.
As I've said time and again, what you can't see can kill you. But
can't
but
kill
but
you.
Then again, there aren't a lot of coal executives downwind from mountaintop removal sites.
Nope.
Now, middle management maybe. Some yeah. on-site bosses, sure. But no, the CEOs and the CFOs and the COOs and the and the big time shareholders, hell, especially where the shareholders are concerned, if they ever get within 100 miles of a mountaintop removal site, I'm sure it's strictly by accident, or maybe they flew over one time.
They did a flyby.
Yeah.
They did a flyby, but it's every day is a new terror, you know. And then it's hard enough to function in this world. But then you wake up in the morning and you turn on the news and you find out that Aretha Franklin died.
Yeah, I didn't have a good feeling when I started seeing the stories about her being gravely ill. And then when I saw that Stevie Wonder had gone to visit.
Right.
Yeah.
We do. And to make matters even worse, the maggots were posting pictures of her with Trump.
Oh, and well, Trump said she had a fabulous voice. She worked for me many times. You know, like she was the help.
Like she was the help, right? But what I love, this is actually the first time, because I saw his tweet about her, right? And so I was like, okay, what are people reacting? And I've never, in all this time, I've never gone on his Twitter feed because I value my sanity. But what people were posting, when he posted what he said about her and everything, people went ape shit about how dare you even mention her name. You know,
Yeah, maybe he could. Hey, he called another black woman a dog. Maybe you could call her a dog too.
Right. And
I mean, I feel vulgar and filthy even saying that, and I apologize, Tracy.
I understand, and even if you know, but just the fact that people were pissed off, they're like, "How? Don't even say her name. Don't even put a thought that anything about her in your Twitter feed." I mean. And they posted what Obama and Michelle and Barack Obama said about her. And they're like, this is what.
That's what a tribute sounds like. Not she used to work for me.
Huh?
Yeah, what Obama said is what a tribute should look like, should sound like. Not
exactly.
She was great. She used to work for me.
And she's dead. You know, no condolences, nothing. But it was just. I just found this out today. Do you know that when Angela Davis was thrown in jail, she offered to put up her bail?
I did not.
How badass is that?
Very. You'd expect that from you'd expect that from the woman who sang R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
And her thing was, and this is what she said why she was going to do it. She's like, I have the money because black folks pop my music. And if I don't give back to my community, who will? But that was, you know, and she's like, I don't care how much it is. I got the money. And this was the night, when did Angela Davis go to jail? Was that the 60s?
Seems, yeah.
67, 68, whatever. She's like, I don't care how much it is. You know, if whether it be 50,000, 100,000, 250,000, I got you. That's where you know she was going to put her money.
1972.
Okay, 72. She, and that was, so $250,000 in 1972 dollars, Bob. When a house, like when my mom and my stepdad bought their house in 1971, 72, I think the house was like $60,000 back then. I think it was about that. So, yeah. But it's just, so when, you know, the maggots start claiming Aretha Franklin and Trump started claiming Aretha Franklin and all that, you know damn well somebody was going to put up bail money for Angela Davis to give a flying fuck about Donald Trump. That, you know, that is just, and of course, you know, I was a mess all day. This is the first time in the last, you know, today really that I stopped crying, because, you know, Aretha Franklin for me was everything. I mean, she wasn't a classic beauty at all. You know, she was a teenage mother. She, you know, went through heartache and heartbreak and all that. But she never let everything, you know, she never quit. She never gave up. When she released her music, her first album in a long time in the 80s, Freeway of Love, and there was something about Aretha's making a comeback. Aretha's like, I've never gone anywhere. I've always been here. You know, don't discount me just because you haven't heard from me in a while. I've always been here. But Aretha Franklin, I don't know. I mean, when she's saying, you know, you make me feel like a natural woman, that song, did you see her performance? When at Kennedy Center Gardens, when she did it, when she natural woman for the Carole King's tribute, have you ever seen that?
I don't think I have. I'll have to look it up.
You have to, because it moved Barack Obama to tears. She you know, she comes out on stage with her fur coat and her ever-present pocketbook. I never realized that about her, but everywhere she went, she had a purse. She comes out on the stage, Bob, with her fur coat and her purse, and puts her purse on the piano. And, of course, she, you know, starts singing Natural Woman. Carole King, the crowd goes crazy, right? So at one point toward the end of the song, she gets up off from the piano, stands up and singing, and then she throws off her coat, her fur coat, and just, you know, throws her arms up and just, I'm just like, wow. And it was like one of the last, you know, I think she stopped performing, to, you know, in 2017. But I just, you know, what did Aretha Franklin mean to you, Bob, as a white guy growing up down in the South?
Well, I grew, growing up in the South, I was lucky to be surrounded by a sort of a revolution in soul. Because of where I grew up,
right,
in the South, and so she was one of the first black voices that I heard. Now, and this may seem kind of stereotypical, there was a lot of Nat King Cole played in my house.
Oh yeah,
and Nat King Cole was no slouch either. When it came to the struggle for civil rights, but
no.
There was no Aretha Franklin played in my house because she frankly postdated any knowledge that my father or mother had of modern music. We had a ton of Johnny Mathis and a whole bunch of Nat King Cole. No Aretha Franklin. I heard about Aretha Franklin as a little white boy in a recently integrated elementary school in Alabama. And the little black kids that I went to school with and
the fact that I was going to school with little black kids was still pissing off a lot of people in Alabama. You know, not because me, but because little white kids. I mean, mixing of the races. But we had an AM station that played a steady stream of soul, and that's where I heard it. And you know, it wasn't like what the white ladies sang in my church, because it would move you. And it carried. I don't care what the words were. I can't even necessarily tell you the first song of hers that I heard. But I do know that I heard power. And I do know that probably more the little girls I went to school with than the little boys were just on fire. Maybe they were hearing things like this in their own churches, but not like this. And so, you know, that was, and had integration not come to Alabama at the time that it did, I may never have known, or I may not have known until I was well into my adulthood. But I'll trade you clip for clip. When you get done, the website Quartz, which is at QZ.com, and it's under their segment Quartzy, Q-U-A-R-T-Z-Y.
Uh-huh.
There's an article there called "Watch the Moment in Rural Alabama When Aretha Franklin Became the Queen of Soul." And it's a clip, and I mentioned it earlier in the program, it's a clip from the documentary Muscle Shoals. And if,
oh, Muscle Shoals, they talked about her, about when she did a recording down there.
And she's in it,
something
yeah,
like that.
She's in it. And I would, if it weren't for the fact that my equipment is about 17 shades of screwed up right now, I'd play it. Because as the article sets out, I think it was CBS had first signed her. No, Columbia.
Columbia.
And they were going to try, and they were going to try to turn her into a Billie Holiday type, or a sort of a lounge act.
Right, jazz and show tunes and all that bullshit.
And it was not working. Nope. And Atlantic Records got her. And they got her down to Muscle Shoals. They managed to record a track, and then all hell maybe all hell didn't break loose with her. There's an all hell broke loose segment in the movie, but it was down in Muscle Shoals that she found her voice. And as the article notes, coming to Muscle Shoals was the turning point in my career, she said, and she says that in the film.
Yeah, of course, like I said, a lot of the maggots were on there from Alabama talking about Muscle Shoals and this is where she became who she was and all this. And I'm like,
well, I mean, that isn't necessarily maggot conduct because,
No. It was
all
maggots
the...
because they were claiming there was the ones that were excited about, but then there was the maggots that were, saying, co-signing with about and somehow working Trump into and all this.
Jesus!
It was just like, motherfuckers, really.
But the fact of the matter is, as that documentary makes clear, it's the intersection of a bunch of non-racist white musicians who just wanted to be as funky as what they were hearing that made the Muscle Shoals sound happen. And it was that sound that drew Jerry Wexler to bring her down to Muscle Shoals. And that's where the magic happened. But if you go over to QZ.com under Quartzy, watch the moment in rural Alabama when Aretha Franklin became the Queen of Soul.
And
I
it's
will do that.
And again, the whole documentary is magic. But she cannot be overestimated. I mean, the MSNBC played the clip of her singing at Barack Obama's inauguration. And that's probably one of those things that just drives Julius Keeser around the bend, because he couldn't get an Aretha Franklin.
No, and that was a lot of the posts that people wrote about, you know, who played at your inauguration.
It, right, exactly.
You know, she would never, you know. Would never sing it. Would have never sang at your inauguration ever. Ever. Don't even. Not even. Not even close. Not even. You know. There's just no way. No way. I just sent you the clip from the Kennedy Center.
Oh,
this was actually. Actually, this was. This performance was not long after the musical Beautiful hit Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And so the woman that's introducing Aretha is the woman that played Carole King on Broadway. And so she gives kind of a background on the song, you know, Natural Woman, you know, how she sang it on Tapestry and all that.
Right.
But that Aretha's version superseded anything that she could do. And to watch, when you watch the performance, to see the pure joy in Carole King, from what I understand about the Kennedy Center honors, the people who are being honored have no idea until the people perform who's going to be performing or what's being said. It's all a surprise. So Carole King had no idea that Aretha Franklin was going to be, you know, singing. I mean, how could she not know that, you know, come on, you know, how could Aretha Franklin not perform Natural Woman, but still? It was just, it was transcendent. And to watch a president with class sit there and, you know, because of who Aretha Franklin is to Black people and, you know, not stand on ceremony. He's like, this is Aretha Franklin singing, you know, is singing, and I'm in the presence of greatness. I'm not going to sit there stoic and all that. I'm going to appreciate who this woman, you know, at the time is. I mean, who else but Aretha Franklin could command a standing ovation from a sitting president of the United States? I don't know.
But, no,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, could you? I don't get. I, you know.
Well, I mean, and how could hear, no? You know, how could you sit at that performance, and just sort of sit there and nod your head?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The only way you don't at least move a little bit is if you cannot move a little bit.
If you cannot move a little bit, absolutely. You know, and to hear her read the tribute to her, you know, from, you know, Paul McCartney, Elton John, the Rolling Stones. I mean, all these people who, and one.
Oh, hell, Keith Richards is probably sitting in sackcloth and ashes right now.
Mm-hmm. In some shape, form, or fashion has been influenced or anything by her. And like I said, you know, and let's not even forget about her gospel music.
You can never discount the fact that what she had, some of it was native, but somewhere, you know, it was internal to her, but it had, the talent had to be developed, and that happened in church. And her daddy was a close associate of Dr. King.
Well, you know that she was part of Dr. King's choir. that she actually toured with King. I didn't know that either.
When no, I didn't.
16 years old. She actually toured. And another thing about her during the Civil Rights Movement is when activists went to jail, besides Angela Davis, she actually put up bail money.
Yeah. I found that story. Her daddy suggested she not, but she said, I have to.
Mm-hmm. That could have been career suicide, but she didn't.
I mean, and let's remember, Angela Davis spent 15 months in prison on a charge for which she was found not guilty.
Not guilty.
And you're supposed to just walk through, walk out into the light of freedom and say, you know, all's forgiven. Hell no.
No. You know, because they didn't, you know, but the fact that, you know, Aretha Franklin's like, these are my people. This is who I am. I wouldn't be who I am or where I am if not for my people. So, you know, like I said, I didn't know anything, you know, because I didn't know about her activism and all that. I had no idea. No idea.
And that's the way it so often was. People quietly going about the business of doing the right thing. It was a different era, Tracy, when there wasn't necessarily a publicist sitting there saying, "Oh, darling, they'll love you for this. We've got to get a press release out right now."
Right. No, you know, just the fact that she, you know, didn't care about the consequences and stuff like that. Like I said, her music was the soundtrack to my life. Because you figure she's not that much, you know, she was born in 42. My mom was born in 49, so she's not that much older than my mom. So, you know, I grew up listening to Aretha Franklin because my mom was growing up listening to Aretha Franklin. You know, when you're the daughter of a 16-year-old, you're going to hear that kind of music. So it's just, you know, there's only been a few people that when they died, it just devastated me. Besides Aretha Franklin.
Prince.
Aretha Franklin, Prince, you know, I was on the floor. I couldn't breathe. But, you know, the first celebrity that passed away with, and that I didn't even realize how sad I was, that I actually cried, and I couldn't believe I was crying, 13 years old, when Minnie Riperton died.
Ooh, yeah.
Because I just could not function as a 13-year-old because her music moved me in a way that, you know, I don't, like I said, I'm not a big music person. I don't know a lot about music or anything like that. But Mimi Riperton was just the end-all be-all for me. On top of the fact that when I was a kid, I used to play Little League or softball in Brentwood, and not long before she got sick, my mom showed me her, you know, Maya Rudolph, because she was at the park with her dad, and I'm like,
aww.
You know, and right, you know, and it was like, wow, you know, you think about these things, you know, didn't think about it back then. I'm like, okay, Maya Rudolph, you know, that's Minnie Riperton's daughter, but then to see who Maya Rudolph, and she looks just like her mom. She really, really does. But it's just, you know, but anyway, I it's hard for me about Aretha Franklin dying, but she was sick for so long.
She really was, and she struggled for
years.
Yeah.
With a lot of stuff. And so...
And didn't give up.
You know, and didn't give up.
There's a new record. The plan was, if I read correctly, the plan was for her to go on a limited tour.
Yes.
In the next few months. In support of the new album.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I'll be anxious to hear it. because she carried that vocal power that was backed up by her power of character and power of spirit all the way to the end.
All the way. I mean, and when you watch that, when you get a chance, when you watch that clip of her at the Kennedy Center Honor, that was in 2015, so it was 3 years ago. And apparently when she did one of her last performances, I haven't been able to find a clip of that, is when she performed for Elton John's AIDS Foundation. And he remarked about, it was obvious that she was sick, but it didn't matter. She still, rocked the joint. So, as much as I'm going to miss her, I'm glad she's not suffering anymore. It's just hard,
Yeah.
I thought I was done crying, but I guess I'm not.
Well, not all tears are an evil, as the saying goes. It would be better for her to have had more years. If they could have been quality years.
If the quality, on the respirator or in hospice care or any of those things that happen when you're of a certain age and you get sick. Her body couldn't take it anymore. And she's,
there's a good article in the New York Times that lays out the context for respect and, when it hit. The song arrived in the summer of 1967. It arrived amid what must have seemed like never-ending turmoil. Political assassinations, the Vietnam draft. Muhammad Ali had been stripped of his championship title for refusing to serve in the war. So amid all this upheaval comes a singer from Detroit who'd been around most of the decade doing solid gospel R&B work, but there was something about this black woman's asserting herself that seemed like a call to national arms. It wasn't a polite song. It was hard. It was deliberate. It was sure. And that all came from Miss Franklin, her rumbling, twanging, compartmentalized arrangement. It came, of course, from her singing. And one of the points that this article makes, you see the same thing said in different contexts, that based on what we have today, we are not likely to see her or her kind again.
Ever, no. And it was so crazy. Just a couple of days ago, I was having a conversation, I forget with who, about, I was watching the clips. There's a new musical that's starting, I think, next week out here about the Temptations. It's called Ain't Too Proud.
And that'll be fun.
It's going to be great. But, listening to the people that were singing, the performers and watching the choreography and stuff, and I pointed out to whoever I was talking to, is that we will never have singers like that again. Because the black church isn't what it used to be. We don't have that gospel, that deep-rooted gospel music anymore, really. I mean, because now we all have these mega churches, these multicultural, and nothing wrong with multicultural churches.
No, but there's plenty wrong with mega churches, and an Aretha Franklin is never going to arise in Creflo Dollar's church.
No.
To cite an African-American mega church hustler.
No, you're not gonna, because that means they would have to share the spotlight.
Bingo.
You're not gonna have that kind of music anymore.
Well, Steve just wrote in from New York and he said Bob America in its current state just isn't worthy of her. And when I read that at first, I thought, well, no, but if it's not, but if that's the case, of whom is America worthy And I kind of hate myself for where my mind immediately went, Tracy. Feel free to tell me if I'm wrong. America is worthy of Taylor Swift.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, she is. Yes, they are. Taylor Swift, these little plastic little girls.
Who sing in squeaky little whimpers. And say, I mean, hell, there's nobody out there. There's not many out there with the, you know, Madonna turned 60 today. There's not many out there with the pipes of a Madonna.
No.
And Madonna's a far damn cry from Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
It's,
I mean, Madonna's probably pissed. It's like, oh, God, you know, if she died, you know, to have Aretha Franklin outdo her in death. Because today is her birthday. Madonna's birthday.
Well, but it's also her 60th birthday, so she's probably just as happy that it's being overshadowed.
That's true, too.
There are legitimate questions that follow on the heels of her passing, and in moments like this, you know, we ask questions. What is the state of, you know, what's the state of soul? What's the state of R&B? What's the state, when Tom Petty died, and I'm not making the comparison at all, what's the state of rock and roll?
Right. When these people go, you know, like you said, like Tom Petty, Aretha Franklin, James Brown, Michael Jackson, Prince.
You know, hell, David Bowie.
David Bowie. You know, John Lennon, you know, George Harrison. It just makes me think.
I mean, the entire edifice that is rock and roll may just absolutely collapse when either Mick or Keith goes.
Right. So it won't be the same.
Well, I mean, I try, and I get a little help along the way from people like Michael and Madison, who keeps up. I have a hard time keeping up with modern music. Yeah, this music the kids are listening to these days. And, you know, I don't want to be that guy. But there's not a lot of stuff out there that's speaking to me. You know, you and I had a conversation, way over a year ago now, about the Alabama Shakes. And I heard that, and it was like, well, you know, I can recognize that has something in it that sounds like what rock and roll, R&B, oddas sound like. And there's a bunch of stuff that just doesn't. And I think that's what turns people like you and me into geezers. And I will apply geezer specifically to me. I'm not going to include you in that. I'm sorry, Tracy. I apologize completely. But you can't find stuff that measures up. I don't want to hear somebody trying to be the Stones, but I want to hear somebody that can bring the same energy and bring the, and yeah, geezer, I guess, because I don't. There's not a lot of it out there. Does that make any sense?
Yep.
So. We will not see her like again, and I'm glad you gave us an opportunity for an extended appreciation of her life and her art. I really am, Tracy. And let me ask you, all things otherwise, are you doing okay? I lost Tracy. No, we darned. You'll have that. Asa, not Brother Deacon Asa. Note coming from Asa, I always enjoyed Aretha's performance with Matt Guitar Murphy in the Blues Brothers movies. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was magic. And how they landed her for that. But then again, that was special in its own right. Hey, and it included funny Nazis. So we're pretty much at the end of the program, and we're pretty much dealing with a goose egg this evening. That's tough. We'll carry over Larry and Liberalville's challenge to Friday on the front porch. I hate to talk about it so much. I do. I'm sorry. but I worry because I know the bills that are due and the bills that have to be paid, and goose eggs are tough, and this has been a goose egg evening. Is there something that we can knock down in 5 minutes or so? Yeah, well, there's a quick follow-up on Pappy McDaniel down in Muslippi. So after he got his ass handed to him over Robert E. Lee, he then decided to put up a poll. In light of all the political correctness and leftist hysteria, otherwise defined as people who actually know history. It's history, not hysteria there, Pappy. In light of all the political correctness and leftist hysteria, I'm curious about what you think. How should Robert E. Lee be remembered? And this was a poll on Twitter. Hero or villain? Well, as of a little while ago, I'm not sure where it is now, 1,156 votes have been cast. And villain was ahead of hero by 86% to 14%. Ouch. Not that that's going to change the policy positions or anything of... Pappy McDaniel. Probably out there worrying about all that miscegenating. Ron mentioned that a couple of minutes ago. Pappy wouldn't approve. He wouldn't stand for that miscegenating. No, not at all. This is kind of interesting. Al Franken is speaking out again. And from a strategic standpoint, it's damned interesting. Addressing the issue of whether or not Donald Trump is a treasonous crook, traitorous crook, Al Franken went on Facebook and published the following. It wasn't that long ago that nearly every Trump tweet included a no collusion. But those have become few and far between since Giuliani came up with collusion isn't a crime. The thing is, collusion is a crime. If you collude with somebody to break a law, that's called conspiracy. You can't get out of a crime by finding a synonym. I'm not guilty of murdering the victim, I merely killed her. And there's no such thing as first degree killing. If that were the case, any criminal defense lawyer would need a thesaurus. My client didn't steal the iPhone. He pilfered it. I demand that he be released forthwith. Franken concludes, this is the kind of insult to everyone's intelligence that Trump specializes in. I say it's interesting strategically because if he can manage to get under Julius Geiser's skin, what will come back is, well, that's all well and good, but he groped women. Hey, yeah, what? There, Geiser, disgust us? He groped who? You see what I mean. And we managed to make it all the way through the program without talking about Omarosa. But the schadenfreude is delicious. There's a tendency out there to try to just generally dismiss her because, well, you know, she was happy to work for the scumbag for as long as she was. But here's the thing. What if Omarosa was the one that caused him to go completely to pieces? Because that's what it sounds like is happening. He's demanding that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III run out and arrest her. I want her arrested. I don't care if what... You arrest her, Jeff. You chicken shit. When arguably there's not a hell of a lot to arrest her for. But every time somebody runs their mouth, turns out she's got a tape of them. She burned down Trump daughter-in-law Laura Trump today. And it kind of makes you wonder who she's going to burn next. Because she's got tape of, apparently she recorded everybody. To the point that, oh, by the way, just a quick note, there's more corroboration now of what she says about the that particular, the recordings of Tangerine Tiberius using that particular word. Tom Arnold has said he knows for a fact that those recordings exist of Chlamydia Claudius using that particular word. And more importantly, Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller, who was on The Apprentice, said he will not try to recall exactly what was what happened because he might not end up telling the exact truth, but he knows that the words were used because he was there every week and he heard the words used. Not a lot of coverage of that, but damn telling, without a doubt. So here we are at the end of the program. Thanks, everybody, for chiming in this evening. Thanks for joining in this evening, participating in whatever fashion you choose to do. Remember, tomorrow, Friday on the Front Porch, I hope we have a rousing good conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of our subscribers and all of you who contribute during the program and as you listen to the podcast. Tonight's one of those podcast crew moments. Anybody listening to this in delay, help is needed, because tomorrow night the fundraising goal is going to be $627 to close the week. That means we didn't make the fundraising goal for three nights plus this week. But thank you just the same. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.